Hello again. It's time for another GeezerCast. It's a beautiful day here at the farm, but boy, it sure is a grumpy day out there in the financial markets. We've had a pretty rough, couple, 3 weeks. And so I thought I'd do a little possibly extremely ironic podcast to my unborn grandchildren, sort of standing in the middle of it all. I sort of envision these podcasts like the ones that people might have done back in the late 20s, just before the Depression, a source of great entertainment for us, if any had been done. And I'm not sure. It sort of goes back and forth for me on this, but this was not a great week. Oil is now above $90 a barrel, so it's up almost, I think it's up like 80% for the year, which is pretty amazing. Gold is at almost $800 an ounce, which isn't so amazing, because I can remember many, many decades ago, gold being $300 an ounce, so that's not that dramatic, although it's, I think, as high as it's gotten recently. And the thing that really blew my doors off, I just got back from the ICANN meetings, and the next meeting that we're in L.A., and the next meeting, the next ICANN meeting is in New Delhi. And so I checked out the hotel website, thinking, well, I'll just stay in the venue hotel. I kind of like doing that because it makes it easier to hang out with people. But the hotel in Delhi, the cheapest room is $650 a night, which just blew my doors off. Now, there isn't a component that Westerners are quite frightened of staying anywhere except sort of Western isolationist cocoons. And so there's sort of a tier of about 10 hotels in Delhi that cater to that fear. And then all the rest of the hotels cost about one-tenth as much. And those hotels are fine. I can remember staying in those hotels when I was a kid, staying with my folks over there, and they were just nifty. Actually, quite quaint, kind of British Raj sort of deal. So that's what we'll do. But I was impressed at $650 a night for a hotel, which is partly due to the cocoon, but partly also due to the sort of collapse of the dollar, which is at its low point, probably going to go lower. And so I just thought I'd talk a little bit to the unborn grandchildren today about some of the implications of this. I think that we have played this pretty well. Marcy has this tremendous aversion to debt, which has saved my ass more times than I can count. And the upshot is that we, for all intents and purposes, have no debt. And so all of the recent sort of debt-related crises don't impact us at all, and at least directly. Indirectly, they do, especially if the economy continues to decline, which I think it might, because we're sort of, for you, my unborn grandchildren, let me replay the bidding a little bit. Over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of sort of loosening of the standards for people to borrow money, especially to finance their houses. To the point where it got pretty ludicrous. About 2 years ago, you could basically go out and without having to prove your income, you could get essentially a no down payment, no interest for some period of time loan. Then it would turn into an interest only loan, and then sometime in the distant future, like 5 years or 10 years later, the piper would appear and you'd have to start paying principal. The upshot is that a lot of people who shouldn't have bought houses, people who can't afford them really. And a lot of other people took a lot of money out of their houses that they shouldn't have, and use that money to buy stuff, either good stuff like college educations for their kids or not so good stuff like cars and toys. The bottom sort of fell out of all that about 2 or 3 months ago, and we're only just now starting to sort of feel the impact of it. The stock market has been wildly erratic for the last, really, 3 or 4 years, but it's gotten incredibly erratic in the last 6 months. And there's a pretty good case to be made that it's going to get worse before it gets better, because people are being foreclosed on their houses in sort of a rolling cycle. It's not all happening at once, and so I think this is going to take a couple of years. In the meantime, housing values, which have been just on this unbelievable tear, are, you know, they're not collapsing, but they're going down, which has people all excited. They're not going down actually that much. They're going down sometimes 5% a year, sometimes 10% a year. But if you are on a zero money down, only interest, pay the piper later kind of deal, even a 5% decline in the value of your house is a problem, because you're all leveraged up, and now the value of the thing that you owe money on is less than what your debt is, and that leads to considerable pain. So there's one little unborn grandchildren story for you, that the punchline of which is, sure, a little debt's okay every once in a while, but don't do a lot of debt, and try to get rid of it as fast as you can. If you need to buy a house, for sure, that's what mortgages are about, but try and pay it off early, and don't try and get yourself leveraged to the eyeballs and hope that things will stay the same. The old formula for houses was that you paid 20% of the value of the house in a down payment. And I think that when Marcy and I bought our houses, we always paid at least 30 or 40% down, and we usually paid the mortgages off in like 5 to 10 years. And I commend that to you. It's not nearly as exciting, and it does mean that you have to sort of live a slightly more modest lifestyle, but in the long run, you sleep easier, let me tell you, because we're sort of riding through this little financial crisis with nary a problem at all. Another sort of story for the unborn grandchildren is that there's at least a pretty good case to be made that the way we drive cars today is going to change, because everybody in the world is driving cars the way we do today. In fact, there's a story today in the Times about a car in India that will cost $2,500, and India is viewing this sort of as the Model T. And Tom Friedman has a piece in the New York Times that I think I agree with that says, you know, before you emulate what we did and totally crater your infrastructure, because there isn't room on their roads for all those cars, you might think about a creative solution to transporting people. And he points to cell phones and says, look, you know, India sort of bypassed the whole switched telephone network thing and went straight to cell phones. And leapfrogged the U.S. in that in those terms, and so they have a pretty fabulous cell phone network. And he's sort of encouraging them to do the same thing with personal transport, because putting a whole boatload more cars on the road and consuming a whole boatload more gasoline and creating a whole bunch more infrastructure troubles isn't going to work real well. Here in the U.S., we're sort of still living in the, oh, we're going to drive our cars culture, and I am actually a minor contributor to that. I recently bought a simply gigantic pickup truck and a fifth-wheel trailer to pull behind it, because sort of our dream is to become little nomadic retirees. But the good news is that I bought a pickup truck that gets, for a pickup truck, pretty good gas mileage. Gets way better gas mileage than like a Toyota Tundra, for example, which gets simply ghastly gas mileage, especially when you put a trailer behind it. And the other thing is that to offset my egregious sins, I went out and bought a Prius, too. So our fleet average isn't too bad. I think our fleet average is about 40 miles to the gallon. And we hardly ever drive the truck with one person in it. So, you know, in terms of person miles to the gallon, we get pretty good mileage in the truck. So that's sort of the view from inside the bubble, you know. It's kind of, I got no conclusion to this story, just sort of observations that things are getting a little weird and a little choppy here in 2007. We've got a series of presidential candidates who aren't really talking about much except the peripheries of all this, and that's too bad because I think we really do need a little more dialogue about this in the country. But I think it'll come. And I guess to wrap up, the only other thing is that I am not terribly dire about all this. I am not foreseeing sort of Y2-esque end of the world as we know it, collapse of society where we all live off fruits and berries and grubs. I'd really think that you know, economic markets will send progressively harsher signals and that eventually we will indeed sort of bend our behavior around to the right thing. And that what we're seeing right now is some of those signals. And that hopefully we'll come through this actually quite a bit smarter and a whole lot better off at the end. Because if we keep, you know, sort of drawing the trend lines the way they're going right now, when you, my unborn grandchildren, show up on the scene, it's going to be really nasty. And I'm going to be embarrassed about that. So keep connecting those dots and looking to the future. And have a great week. And I'll see you the next time.